Hey everyone, welcome to the next episode of Zero to Infinity, our new podcast. In this episode, we are going to cover themes, trends, forward-looking statements and big ideas we are excited about, focused on all things software, AI, and followed by fintech. For this episode, I have Avnish and Vikram with me here. So thank you guys for joining.
I knew we were going to talk about AI because the black t-shirt came out.
This is what the future looks like. There's so much happening. It's hard to predict what's going to happen in a month, but I'm going to ask you about what's going to happen in the next decade. But before we go there, let's talk about the last couple of years. So, Vikram, maybe a question for you, but when it comes to all things enterprise, how have the last couple of years been and what are some of the highlights?
You know, because you told me to do this look back, then I did the look back. And, you know, the last, 12, 18 months has been incredibly chaotic since that, the ChatGPT moment. And we have sort of every week, like learnt, applied. And then when I look back to the set of investments that we've ended up with in terms of a portfolio, I couldn't be happier or prouder with the way we've ended up navigating to it. And you know, initially we thought the way India would play this entire AI wave would be in the AI apps layer. That's where the talent density is. And that's where, the SaaS ecosystem will evolve into an AI native SaaS ecosystem. And so we thought that's where we should invest, and that's where we started investing. But now we realize that India has a huge role to play in the infrastructure layer, in the model layer, because unless we solve that for ourselves, we can't essentially solve India's AI sovereignty. So we essentially ended up on a different trend line as we kept going down that path. So quick digression, but, you know, if you look at India, we've ended up creating the largest data set in the world. We therefore figuring out what is India's AI approach and mission is existential to the country. And I think the government's actually making that kind of effort, and now founders are making that kind of effort. So we ended up backing two very experienced folks who are sort of close to us. One is Bhavish, and he started on this on Kruthrim, going after essentially India's AI opportunity. And then Sharad Sanghi, who founded NESA, and he's essentially the private cloud entrepreneur from India, and he essentially decided to go after the AI cloud opportunity, and we were privileged to back both of them. And then we had companies like Murph at the more text-to-speech foundational model layer that emerged and, are doing very well on the global stage. And then we have a bunch of AI-native apps companies like AMP on the marketing stack, Atomic Work on the ServiceNow, going after the ITSM and ServiceNow opportunity. So when I look at that portfolio, I feel incredibly privileged, but I know that on a weekly, monthly basis, we were questioning what is the next step. But it seems like we've actually navigated this pretty well and ended up with a set of founders that are really leading us forward into the next decade.
So, at some times, and you and I were just chatting yesterday, that is this really at in any way comparable to the noise we hear in the US? Or in the developed markets about AI. But actually, it's only in the US, not in the other developed markets. If you look at China, their own AI ecosystem is coming into more maturity now, right? So to me, this is actually a very much made in India for India opportunity, plus the made in India for the world opportunity. And I do think that all the noise and sometimes the froth we hear about in the US should not detract away from how meaningful it can be here. I will say that we are not seeing enough company creation. And I would love the founders if we can even trigger it. I know you have invested in a few and we have a interesting portfolio, but it just feels like if you were to say where the opportunity set is, where forget India's right to play, right to win, where some of the founders' right to play, right to win is versus where we are today, I think there's still a gap.
Yeah, you should talk through a little bit on, you know, how, I mean, you've been sort of in the thick of things, and maybe talk also, I missed talking about Grey Labs, which is really a India AI apps opportunity.
So, I think when I think about it, just going back, right, I think we've not seen a lot of deep technical innovation in India when it came to sort of semiconductors, core sort of database technology, all of that in the past. And it, I think all the company creation here was more at the application layer, at the workflow layer, right, over the last 15 odd years. I personally feel like more of that continues, but we have, again, given the sort of decade of entrepreneurship and all of that, more ambitious founders, more who are willing to take bigger risk. And then also VCs, hopefully enough of us who are also willing to take more technical risk and build some of those companies. But I think our mainstay has always been application layer companies, right? And that said, we sort of done a lot of AI application investments, again, for India and for the globe. So like you mentioned, there's Atomic Work in sort of employee-facing workflows. There's AMP in marketing. There's SiftHub on the sales side. There's Grey Labs and Aman who are building kind of vertical solutions for the BFSI market, but all AI-first, AI-native approaches. But so I think a lot of interesting things, equal parts scary and exciting, because no one has a crystal ball. No one can predict the future. But I have opinionated views on how much technology matters or doesn't matter.
I was just going to ask you that. Does it matter anymore? When, for example, one would take, you're right, I can't remember in the last 15 years us having investment memos where in the risks we say technical risk or IP risk, right? We've never grown up like that here. Whereas in the US, you would almost say, can these guys build it? Does it matter anymore? Isn't it all now commoditized? Isn't the best technology? Isn't therefore that an even bigger opportunity?
So I'll give you my version of the answer and then I'll throw back one hot topic at you. But like, if you ask this question around technical risk, right? Like you could also ask this question, what's the moat for OpenAI? Right now they are building unique models and all of that, but everyone else is, there are multiple companies in the running. Some are catching up, some are 6 months behind, but the model race, it feels like everyone's running neck and neck, right? So OpenAI, Anthropic, obviously Google with Gemini, you have X and the Grok model. So there's a lot of competition, right? And I think even for them, it's a race for talent, it's a race for capital, it's compute and then maybe data sets, I don't know how much, but it's still about who can run faster, right? So what are the moats over there, really, right? And if I think about that and just go one step forward to the application layer, my belief is still that as the models get better and better, workflows matter more, right? And just to give you personal real life example, if I want to do something around kind of planning something or, you know, like these planning reasoning sort of things, obviously ChatGPT with Owen is a lot better than that. When it comes to writing content, I prefer Anthropic and the Claude model because just the personality sort of suits my style a little more. If it is something with anything associated to research on the web, I think Google Gemini does better, right? So I realize that we are all using multiple models and based on the use case and the workflow, we gravitate towards different ones. So I think more and more things move towards the workflow and what are the jobs to be done and who's achieving those better. And over there, they're all divergent. So I think when it comes to software, traditional SaaS modes apply, which is brand, right to distribution, depth of workflow, and all of that comes from just deep, deep customer understanding. Right now, there might be some arguments around data and network effects, which are really unique business model innovations, but they're not tech-led at the core. Topic for you, Avnish, how do you feel about, again, when it comes to venture capital in its most traditional sense, was backing technological innovation that distorts markets? We've not seen too much of that in India, but these are usually long kind of incubation periods, high amounts of capital. how do you feel about those investments today, and how have you seen the ecosystem evolve?
Well, we have done it, right? So we did it with Ola Electric. We are doing it with Kruthrim. But I want to come back to, I actually think there is serious democratization in the AI era of everybody's right to play and right to win. I have always been a believer, although there are some nuances to why, let's say, a Google won over a Yahoo. But I have always believed, and there is a technical reason there, one could argue. But overall, that best products win. The Apple iPhone was not the best technology. It's the best product, right? I think the AI, 5 years from now, you said, you know, can we predict? I actually cannot predict the next 10 months. It's easier to predict that 4-5 years from now, we'll be living our lives dramatically differently. We will look at ChatGPT as the MS-DOS moment. You will be talking, I mean, I love travel, all of us love travel, actually. All of us love to actually spend time on curating our own travel experience. But my 80% of that time is not productive. I think the 80 will go to zero. We will talk into somebody, something, some AI agent. Now, to your point, now, will the technology of the LLM processing of that, I'm talking first consumer apps, but I think with this whole consumerization of software, I think it applies everywhere. Will the technology of how that language is being processed going to be the differentiator, or how somebody puts together the experience? I think it's the customer backwards. How do you put together the experience? And Facebook was not the first social network, but it put together the experience. So I'm actually very excited. I don't, but yes, is there a moment in time in venture capital for India where there is technical risk to take? Yes, and we are taking it. When you are doing a tape out of the Bodhi chip of Ola at Kruthrim, there is a technical risk. Now, obviously, you're backing teams. But to your point, the other why now is the best teams have shown up. And it's not just the founders, just the best technical teams. In chip design, 90% of chip design goes through India, right? So you have that talent. And I actually am feeling that there is a huge democratization between basically the flattening of the world in terms of the technology, because all these hyperscalers battling out with each other is bringing the cost to zero, and all the investment, it's basically going to become digital public infrastructure. It's the new creation of open source in AI, but with a lot of money spent on it. But it's great for everybody. And I think the question is that, does it play out like that, and do the founders get it? Because if I was one, I would be doing that.
I think to your point on the digital public infrastructure, and I think we can't wish away that there is value in the hardware layer. So compute is power. There is value in the models, right? And so that will keep accruing to some of the platforms and so on. There's huge value in the data sets, and there's huge value in the workflow and the applications. And if you look at sort of the entire India stack, there's just unbelievable value, both in terms of sort of market cap and so on, but value to consumers and users that has been created just on that software and data set layer. And I think that is crazy power in India's, in India for India and in India for the world. I think we're just starting at that beginning of that journey of using those data sets and app workflows. So that's one. Second is the rate of adoption of AI, especially in India, has just been as quick as everywhere else in the world. The talent density is actually is there. So I just think that there is an opportunity in the made in India for the world. And when I say, and some of it might be made in India for India, then goes to the world. Right? Sort of like how UPI has done, which I think is a tremendously exciting opportunity. I'm going back to the fact that what Avneesh said is part of the, I guess, it's not frustration, but part of the surprise is there's not as many companies coming up, and we definitely want to play a role in that, because it is existential for the country to figure this out. It cannot be left to, I mean, we've never had this opportunity to say that we will define our technology cycle like this. So we have that opportunity at this point in time, and it is existential for the country that you figure it out, because otherwise we will have the same frustrations of essentially, you know, talking to an AI chatbot, which doesn't have our context, which doesn't have the Indian context. Our data sets might be being used outside more effectively than in India. And all of those will play out unless you figure it out today.
So maybe, again, and we can't predict what happens 10 months ahead, let alone 10 years forward. But when you think about the next decade, right, with all things sort of intersection of AI and enterprise, right, what are the few big themes that you think like India and Indian founders can build around? And I'm thinking India out for the world right now.
Why don't you answer your question first? Because you have the most number of companies on your wish list.
Yeah. So I think, at least for me, maybe three themes stand out, right? One is that if I think about AI and especially agents today, and we can later talk about how real or wishful they are as of now and what's the current state of affairs, but what you're ultimately doing is building a system of action, right? Ultimately, instead of me logging into a system and kind of understanding context, planning and executing a task, now I can have a machine do that for me, right? And it's probably something that's going to automate a lot of low-level work, right? So the real market opportunity is kind of moving headcount and services spend into software product spend.
Is it possible that it's all services into products and this is going to turn into a Monday meeting between you and me? So, but yeah. All services goes to products, or is it AI plus services? What's the...
So I think if the question is around business models, there's probably three different possibilities as I see it. One is you take, you know, very sort of repeatable, constrained, transactional work and you convert it into pure play product. I think in a lot of sort of micro workflows and areas that is possible today. So it's a pure product.
There'll be data entry, document processing, things like
yes.
that.
Yes, yeah. Right. The second is maybe you have a new age services company like Infosys 2.0, which is really wolf in sheep's clothing, but it means that you've used AI to automate a lot of internal work. So you're still a services company, but you are, you know, using AI to rapidly come up with PRDs, to prototype, to code, and shipping out those sort of end products quicker, faster, right? There might be new types of services companies which are just doing GenAI implementations, where you're going like saying, okay, I can help build models, fine-tune models, figure out your business workflows and deploy models and agents around it. The fourth is you can have a like a product plus service company, or it's a service as a wrapper on top of a product company. Last year I said ChatGPT wrapper for product. Today I'm saying service as a wrapper on product. But I think a lot of our founders find success in kind of going to customers and say, we will not just give you the product, but we'll give you sort of a consultative expertise. We'll help you implement these products. And a lot of these, at least the AI products, because of the variability in accuracy and output quality, they need some amount of hand-holding, fine-tuning.
What does that mean? So 85% accuracy, a lot of hand-holding, 99%?
85% not good enough, right? So it has to push.
85% is where the horizontals are, so you can't...
Yeah. So maybe that kind of combination, like one founder said, I use professional services as a moat, right? And ultimately enterprise is about trust and reliability. With all these models, they are probabilistic, hallucinations are a feature. So just to get to that point of reliability where people can kind of trust your product, there is some amount of human in the loop required. So some service element for a company which is still a product company at heart can also be an interesting proposition.
Let's go at two threads, Avi. So one is this AI plus services thing. Services has obviously created a lot of jobs. And we have, I mean, with this, yes, there is going to be an $8 to $10 trillion economy, but where are the jobs?
So, you know, my son has been doing research on AI and its impact on jobs. And I have, as a result, read 10 papers with 20 opinions. But, you know, there was one statement I read in one paper, which kind of gave you a sigh of relief, because you actually worry about this. You worry about this around you. You worry about this for the country. I think end to end, if I'm not wrong, last 4 years are big Infosys of the world. 4 year endpoint to endpoint headcount is zero or declined. It could happen to consulting firms. Maybe we will not have as much sympathy there, but you know, BPOs. But then, this is like another industrial revolution. Revolutions keep happening. And the line I read was, humankind figures a way out. And actually that resonates for me. It actually resonates for me. The jobs will change. So I think the no-brainer punt I am willing to take is agents will take over 85-90%, but you want 100% output and the last 15 will always be people. Now, in aggregate, you do theoretical back and forth. Do you end up with a view that, wait, then what happens to those 80% of those the world and the jobs? I think we keep talking about the fact that you create your own surface area. I think the world is about to create its own surface area with AI. New industries will come out that didn't exist. Telecom got you into BPO. New things will, if we could imagine it, maybe Elon Musk can imagine these things, but there's new stuff that will come.
Yeah.
And there will definitely be a retraining that will go on. But then some people are getting older and then there's a new gen coming. They will just learn new things. So that's where I kind of net out, which is, yes, disruption is coming, but not the end of the world. There won't be civil wars because that's what some of the literature says, right? What do you think?
You and I have talked about, but it is that worry, right? That if you don't create enough jobs, that we will end up with some kind of civil war internally. And to me, there is a services economy in India, which is waiting to get unlocked, and it is sort of more local services. And I'm a huge believer in sort of, you looked at it very macro top down, saying humankind will figure a way out. And if I look at the, from an India GDP structure perspective, I think the SMB and SMB has always been a driver of the economy. And so I think, again, Nandan Nilekani had this very simple thing, saying 20 million SMBs creating one job every year, right? That leads to 20 million jobs. Where I think there is a difference is that you can create 20 million services jobs much more easily in this economy. And at least for the medium term, that seems like a path that at least, you know, keeps this equation where you're sort of losing, you know, the increasing headcount from sort of KPO services to it has to be fulfilled by local services as that economy is growing. That's one sort of approach. But then that means it leads to SMB credit being the driver in some ways. I don't know, we're going to talk a little bit about that. So, like you said, humankind will always figure a way out. And I think from an India perspective, I think India always figures out a way. It's hard for me to imagine, and this is one of those statements that might not age well with in a year, that India's demographic dividend is not going to play out in some way. So it's hard for me to imagine, but like I said, we might be just going to a completely new world that I'll have to eat my words in a year.
Yeah, and let's take, maybe put a little bit meat to it, right? Because it cannot be so macro without some. So if you look at, for example, Uber and Ola, right? They created jobs in a new industry, right? Where did those people come from? Like, did they take away jobs of the taxi drivers? It was actually that overall people started finding better means of transport over their existing means of transport. Some of these people came from small towns or villages and they started doing this. You look at overall productivity increase in the US thanks to tech, but their unemployment is the lowest ever, right? So something I believe, so does AI increase world GDP? All the economists are saying 1 to 1.5%. If it does, and if the economic pool is increasing, it will get reallocated in a way that works. How? If we knew, we would not be sitting here.
The other thread is, you know, something that we do a lot of discussion about, which is, you know, what does the next, you know, version of software and interfaces look like with this, right? Which is you talking to agents, then agents talking to agents, and then, you know, agents solving something between themselves, both in enterprise and consumer. And then, you know, something happening for you, right? It's a true system of sort of intelligence and action. So if you're a founder, what would you do?
No, but you know, I think both of you should probably, you have mentioned this trend of servitization of software. I think it's gotten the buzz maybe in the last 6 months. Maybe it's worth first explaining what we are talking about because we assume agentic AI is well known to everybody.
Fair enough.
But
go ahead.
So I think actually a different buzzword, but we talk about AI first or AI native a lot as well, right? And I think I've always been grappling with this question of what does AI native even mean? And again, when we think about like traditional means of software, we have predefined patterns, right? Of like, this is what a screen looks like, this is what a workflow looks like. So I think today all of that is breaking, right? And one way to think about it is you have, instead of a workflow where you are writing if-then conditions and it's very sort of opinionated and declarative, you have LLM as the brain that designs the workflow, right? So it could be like a ChatGPT O1, which does the planning and saying, okay, if I want to achieve these tasks, what are the steps I need to take? It is grounded in knowledge, whether it's knowledge about your enterprise or about general world knowledge, and it's able to plan, right? So it is like the brain which is designing things. Now, beyond that, you need arms and legs to either interact with people or to go execute actions. I think those things are coming up now, right? So again, like if you take even for human interaction earlier, everything was text. Now you have a lot of voice agents, right? And even with MERS, like people use the API to build communication agents with their kind of customers or users. So there is voice as one interaction medium with people, right? There could be, in fact, at the end state when it comes to actions, it could be humanoid robots in the real world sort of taking action on your behalf, and maybe Tesla self-driving cars today are the best example of that, or Waymo for that matter. It could be that I'm asking you to do something in a piece of software and it could go sort of log in on my behalf and execute an action. Anthropic has a computer use API in beta, right? So that's also like if now you have ChatGPT O1, which is planning a task, you have all of these sort of, you can use tools through API, you can execute actions through either real world systems or access a computer through a computer use, look at the screen, navigate it, write text. Now that sort of, it's sort of automating everything that you need to be doing, right? So when I think of AI native, I think there's four or five elements. One is that the LLM is the workflow. There's no workflow outside of that. There is all these other sort of interface and systems of actions. There is a new UX for people, right? Like even usually in a CRM, you have structured information organized in rows and columns, and it displays that to you in this very boring information dense view, right? Maybe the UI is also sort of developed on the fly, very personal, more like a Perplexity search sort of page. So there is a new sort of UX. And then on the business model side, it can be sort of business model innovations or pricing innovations, which is the sort of per action versus per seat pricing, right? So when I put some or all of those elements together, that for me today makes a company AI native or AI first.
I think one part of it is also just the thought process, right? Like if I had just to sort of really dumb it down, like, you know, in the earlier, like, and maybe it's the age.
How early?
When Avnish started writing software, that vintage, it was, you know, it was a database. You sent a query, it'll come back. Then you send another query, they'll come back, right? Then it moved to a world where there was some intelligence. You could ask a more complicated question. It would search everywhere, and then you would get an answer that encompasses all that search. Now you're moving to a world where there is, it's sort of not just thinking about your query and question, but also what is behind that question, and then trying to give you an intelligent answer like you would talk to a person. That same thing is just going to go on steroids. If you look at the enterprise software, then you had all these apps that you would sort of key and you would get information back. Now you essentially have an agent, which is, you know, for if I had to really use very colloquial language, it's a concierge that is sort of helping you along that journey. And then it is talking to other concierges, solving that problem for you in whatever way the agents can solve that problem, and then giving you a solution and sometimes just acting on a solution and saying, that's a solution, I solved it. Or these are your two answers, which one do you want to choose? And I think that fundamental mindset has to seep into some way in which you're building the company, which is you're not thinking of your company as essentially an app, right? You're not thinking of your company as a software product. You're thinking of your company as agents that solve problems, can talk to other agents to actually bring different types of solutions. I think we're at the verge of that sort of mindset shift happening. I know you and I spoke to a very young founder who's all of 23, 24 years old. He has no baggage on any of that old world. And the way they are thinking about sort of this agent universe is completely different. And the way they are thinking about the fundamental architecture of their own product is just completely different. So I think
I feel like that young 23-year-old. So yeah. I think the conventional wisdom a year ago, year and a half ago was, you know, these co-pilots, they'll do 50%, they'll do 60%. CTOs resisted the most, right? Software developers, it's the last 15% that matters. All of that has proven to be wrong.
Yeah.
It's moved at such a pace. I think that same logic is being applied right now to agentic. You know, it's the last mile that matters. And I think we have founders on the wall over here, one of whom has a company called Neuralink. I think, don't be surprised if in 3-4 years you think it and it happens.
Yeah.
Right? And I do think it's that powerful. That's how it is coming together. And to your earlier question, therefore, and coming back to founders, you know, you have talked a lot about the different waves of SaaS. If I was an Indian founder 5 years ago doing SaaS, I would be worried how to compete with the massive incumbents, right? If you wanted a new Salesforce, well, you'll try to replace the software because you'll say, I have a 5x, not even 5x, 2x better software. Maybe it's cheaper. What will happen to those agents who are using the software? They don't want it replaced, right? So today with companies like Atomic Work, we are saying, I'm going to go outcome backwards. I think it's a very big moment. And I hope that ambition of Indian founders unlocks before, and I don't know which VC had said this, before the incumbents catch up. Because actually, in particular in Salesforce, they're having their best results ever and they are launching things like Dreamforce. The incumbents will also figure it, you know, move pretty faster.
Awesome. We'll stop with that. So thank you so much for tuning in. Like, share, comment, subscribe.
No, you don't.
Thank
you.
Okay.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.